The Week in Philly on KYW News Radio is recorded and edited every Friday afternoon. For the latest updates to any of the stories you're about to hear, listen to KYW News Radio anytime on your smart speaker or the Odyssey or iHeartRadio apps. Visit kywnewsradio.com or follow us on social media at KYW News Radio.
This is The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Welcome to our weekly look at the stories that have been making headlines in Philadelphia and the region. My name is Matt Leon, and over the next hour, we will bring in KYW News Radio reporters to break down the stories you have been talking about.
LeBron James is a 76er.
One of the most well-known athletes in the history of mankind, I think you can argue, chose the Philadelphia 76ers.
Tim Jimenez will help us process a stunning development.
More controversy surrounding the office of Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner.
That was a huge issue. There was actually gas in the courtroom when she said it.
Kristen Johansson will have that story. Then Mike Dougherty tells us how a software error apparently led to thousands of non-citizens being registered to vote in New Jersey.
She said fewer than 400 people who actually voted because of this.
Pat Loeb talks about how Philadelphia is looking to leverage its success at hosting the World Cup.
Mayor Parker's trying to build on the momentum.
Then we learn how SEPTA is getting ready to implement its first phase of bus route changes.
They want to make bus travel more efficient.
Mike DiNardo will have all the details.
And Justin Udo will tell us about the Young People's Continental Congress.
They're putting together their Declaration of Aspirations of American Democracy.
All that is ahead over the next hour. I hope you'll join us for The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio. And we will get started right after this.
We start this edition of The Week in Philly with news that broke late Friday morning.
We got LeBron James.
They got him!
Word coming down on Friday that James, one of the greatest players of all time, is signing a two-year, $8 million contract with the Sixers with a player option.
One thing you know about Philly fans, they don't care about anybody besides their home teams.
This news sending shockwaves through the NBA and Philadelphia.
The Philadelphia 76ers are now in play to be a championship favorite.
For more, let's bring in our resident 76er fan, Tim Jimenez. And Tim, first of all, before we dig in what this means, wow, like what was your reaction when you heard this news?
So let me go into how I found out, Matt. I was driving home from a story, ready to go home, and I had been texting with my cousin about different things, a huge Sixers fan as well. So then I see that she texted LeBron to Philly, ? So I'm thinking, what is this, some other rumor that's out there? You know, who knows? Because LeBron has been dragging this whole process out of picking a new team. And then she also said, we'll never get ticks to a game. And then once she said that, I thought, oh my God, there's no way. There's no way. LeBron James, a Sixer, could this actually be the real deal? So I had to pull over. This is the real deal. I'm pinching myself. I cannot believe this, Matt. I cannot believe one of the greatest, not just basketball players in history, but one of the most well-known athletes in the history of mankind, I think you can argue, chose the Philadelphia 76ers.
You say he was dragging this out. It is very obvious to me he was doing his due diligence to make sure that he found the proper landing spot. And I just think we need to set the record straight on that one, Tim.
I think you're right. We've been saying that since day one. LeBron needs to take his time and pick the situation that is best for him and his family. And I think he did that.
Let's glass half full this. Joel Embiid healthy. Recently acquired Jaylen Brown, Tyrese Maxey, VJ Edgecombe. That is an incredible starting five, and I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I think the LeBron moves puts the 76ers right at the top as far as favorites to win an NBA title this coming season.
You have a team that is, I would say, seven or eight really deep, and then you can mix and match guys. And then you bring in LeBron, and who knows who he can bring in as well. The attraction of playing with LeBron has always brought in really good players who come to the team on the minimum. So you can even attract even more talent. I mean, this is a team that is super deep. So all that despair that we felt after the Knicks series, that's been wiped away, honestly.
This is a remarkable move, not just from a basketball standpoint, but this really kind of centers the 76ers at the center of the sports world now. The Sixers are going to be talked about and scrutinized like few teams, not just in the NBA, but in professional sports now. Am I overstating?
You are not overstating. This is cultural, Matt. LeBron James to Philadelphia is cultural. You go to, and I'm Filipino, and the Filipinos love basketball. So for LeBron James, one of the most well-known people on earth, to be a Philadelphia 76er, that brings an amazing amount of cultural relevance to the city of Philadelphia. It's really remarkable. And, you know, the Sixers have had stars through the years. Maybe the last time they've had a player who was a star, not of this caliber, but close enough to it, was Allen Iverson. And before that, Charles Barkley, Dr. J. So this is up there. But you're talking about LeBron, who is up there with Michael Jordan, you know, Wilt Chamberlain, guys who are talked about as the greatest of all time.
Mike Ganzi, the new Sixers director of basketball operations, since he has come on board, he has acquired Jaylen Brown. He has offloaded Paul George's contract, and now he has brought in LeBron James. And there are other moves, but I'm just centering the big ones. Who knows how this is going to play out? I know we are all obviously very excited right now, but we have seen how the best laid plans can fall apart. But as of right now, this is a remarkable run for someone taking over as the decision maker on a team.
Oh, it really is. I mean, talk about a heater. Just making these moves one after the other and capped off by LeBron. He has transformed this franchise, Bob Myers as well, you can argue, transformed this franchise to one that was not as relevant because of the way it ended last season, to one that is at the top of the landscape here in Philadelphia and across the country, but possibly, you know, people love the Birds here. Birds are always going to be number one. But I mean, this, if there's one move that could potentially put a team on top of the Birds, even for a season or two, this is that move.
LeBron James coverage commentary is a cottage industry. You are now putting that on top of an organization that has been ground zero for the most ridiculous things in the world of basketball of the last 30 years. I don't know if we are prepared for what we are going to see.
And not just in this country, but this is global. This is global. So Philly was in the global stage this summer and did incredibly well. World Cup, of course, America 250, the PGA Championship. You had all these things go on in Philadelphia. But to cap it off with LeBron James is truly unbelievable.
All right. Thank you very much, Tim. KYW's Tim Jimenez joining us. We are just getting started on this edition of The Week in Philly. We will have much more for you right after this.
We're not looking for him to be perfect. Nobody in this room perfect. But he possessed the will to go against a system that had been entrenched in carrying on the legacy of injustice. And we have pushed it back, and we got to continue to push it back.
This week, news broke that two attorneys in the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office say that DA Larry Krasner told them to, quote, protect the office or face consequences as they handled a controversial appeal in federal court. For more on this, let's bring in KYW Crime and Justice reporter Kristen Johansson. And Kristen, first off, this all stems from a case that happened in 2007, went to trial in 2009, eventually ended in a murder conviction. Now, give us a quick review of that original case and that conviction.
So this is about the defendant, Dennis Johnson. He was convicted of a 2007 murder in Strawberry Mansion. It was at a convenience store. There were three witnesses who were all there who identified Johnson at different points of the investigation. They identify him as the shooter. And that's really what's at the heart of this particular appeal.
So fast forward to 2021, Larry Krasner's DA, and let's get to the crux of what's in the headlines right now. This conviction, it was on appeal in federal court, right?
So there are levels of appeal, but basically you start at the state court. But for simplicity's sake, it makes its way to federal court. And eventually an assistant district attorney under Larry Krasner named Jacqueline Mason was assigned to this case. And admittedly, she had very little criminal justice experience. She testified last week that she wrote what's known as a motion to concede relief, meaning that the office was going to side with the defendant, that his conviction should be overturned. But she told the judge during that testimony that was all at the direction of her boss at the time, a guy whose name is Matt Stiegler. He's been in and out of the office over the years with different titles. She said that they had a series of meetings with the Innocence Project and the federal defenders, who are the defendant's lawyers, figuring out basically how to get him out of jail. She called it colluding, essentially working with them. Now, this is highly problematic in the legal system. And when she actually said it, there were gasps in the courtroom when this was said. The cases are supposed to be adversarial, meaning that one side fights for their client while the other side fights for the victims, and the community and a judge or a jury then figures out what is right, kind of like what the truth is. Backing up, though, for a second, Mason writes this, and as she said, it was at the direction of her boss. Fast forward a couple years after she wrote this to this past May, there were just court backlog reasons and such. Other attorneys within the district attorney's office filed something to the court saying, whoops, never mind. She shouldn't have written that motion. It was full of misstatements. And now we don't agree with the defendant. We don't agree that he should have his conviction overturned. That is what's highly problematic with the courts, because everything filed by attorneys has to be accurate. You can argue what you want to argue in this, but you have to use facts to sway the opinion of the court. And it has to be factually accurate. And this was not factually accurate. So basically, the judge here is trying to determine what happened in just the filing. So it's almost kind of separate, like two separate cases going on. There is what's happening with this defendant, but additionally, this is kind of what's happening behind closed doors that he's trying to figure out.
So then this week we have more developments. What happened here?
That testimony from Jacqueline Mason last week and some of what her boss said, he couldn't recall a lot of their emails or conversations. Following all of that, two attorneys who filed that second court document saying, never mind, they filed something to the judge saying that D.A. Krasner told them to protect the office essentially at all costs or there would be consequences. Now, the attorney general's office was brought in because judges want them to review how this appeal came together. They're brought in what's known as an amicus brief. So basically, they're trying to be that adversarial side. So there's speculation here that D.A. Krasner didn't want the AG's office to figure out how this appeal came together, thus the protect the office comment. And this is coming on the heels of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court telling the district attorney's office that anytime that they want to overturn a conviction in state court, that the attorney general's office has to be involved and essentially check their work.
So what have we heard from Larry Krasner or the DA's office about all this?
Well, so actually late Thursday night, the DA's office filed a response saying that those two attorneys were, quote, ill-informed and not, they shouldn't have filed anything for the office. But the filing also doesn't dispute what Krasner said to them about the consequences. They also note in this filing that they hired another attorney from the Midwest to handle this appeal, to actually handle what's at the crux of the appeal for the defendant. It's not this part, but what's actually happening in the actual appeal. So again, this is kind of a case within a case. And earlier this week, I just also have to mention that we did go out to an event that was publicized by the district attorney's office saying that he was going to be there. They had something calling out what they called as racist and unjust court rulings, basically referring to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling. But it came this week and we went there. We're going to try and ask the district attorney questions, but he ended up not being in attendance. We haven't had a chance to directly ask him. When we did ask the office, we got basically a no comment from the office.
And what's next here?
There's going to be a second evidentiary hearing with the additional people that were involved in that kind of decision making, both for the withdrawal of the appeal. There were four attorneys that were on that list, and they're going to be called to testify. And if I had to guess, Matt, I believe that the district attorney will likely also be called to testify now that he's involved in all of this.
All right. Thank you very much, Kristen. That's KYW Crime and Justice reporter Kristen Johansson joining us. Much more to bring you right after this.
This entire situation is unacceptable, and we will remove anyone from the voter rolls who may have improperly registered.
Welcome back to the Week in Philly. And on Tuesday, New Jersey Governor Mikey Sherrill announced that back in 2023, more than 6,000 non-citizens in the state of New Jersey were erroneously registered to vote. For more on this, let's bring in KYW South Jersey reporter Mike Daugherty. And Mike, what happened here?
Yeah, so they were registered to vote through the state's automatic voter registration process at motor vehicle offices all over the state. Now, this happened even though the people, they checked the box as they were supposed to, that says they're non-citizens. So they checked that box, but Cheryl says in 2023, and this stopped in 2024, she just heard about it last week, but this came through that they checked the box but were put into the system anyway.
Individuals indicated that they weren't citizens and weren't eligible to vote.
We mentioned 2023, a little bit into 2024. So this happened under Governor Phil Murphy's administration, the previous administration, and they just kept it under wraps.
That's kind of what it sounds like. Murphy's team, they knew about it. They never said a word about it publicly. Obviously, that's not good. Cheryl called that unacceptable.
It's unacceptable that the vendor released software with such a glaring error. It's unacceptable that the MVC took a year to get this issue fixed. And it's unacceptable that no one in the previous administration brought this to light, demanded accountability, or took action when it happened years ago.
So you mentioned that the governor learned about this last week. Why did she decide to go public with it now? Was this just a transparency move?
Yeah, she said she heard about it last week. She said their, you know, her whole administration is based on transparency and accountability. And as soon as they heard about it, they started looking into it and they came up with the number of 6,600 that they said were erroneously registered. So they tried to get on top of it right away.
Now, while the number of people accidentally or erroneously registered, you mentioned 6,600. It looks like the number of people that may have actually voted is much, much smaller, right?
Yeah, Cheryl says they identified about 400. She said fewer than 400 people who actually voted because of this. So it's not enough to have a big impact on her election, for example. She won by a really large margin. Other big races, it wouldn't affect either. But, you know, for her and for other state officials, this is concerning nonetheless.
Yeah, and it is one of the things. I think we have to balance two things here. This is obviously not good and alarming, but that number is very small and makes up a very, very, very small percentage of the voters in an election statewide.
No, it's a very small number. It's less than a tenth of 1% of the registered voters. There's more than 6 million registered voters in New Jersey. This is extremely small. It should be noted, though, but, you know, how do we know that that's it? There's got to be some sort of, they haven't said how they got to that figure. So this is all still under investigation still.
What's the state doing about this now?
Well, the state says it's in the process of removing all 6,600 non-citizens from the voter rolls. Nobody really said anything about why that hasn't happened already. This is, you know, 2 years ago at this point. The state is blaming the software vendor, the firm called IDEMIA. It's a French-based company. The company, though, you know, the state's saying they're going to get rid of that company from doing this software stuff. And the company, however, says it's not responsible and it was never responsible for voter eligibility. They say that strictly falls on the Department of State and the Board of Elections to verify voter eligibility. So this is a big ball of wax.
Voter fraud is a favorite hobby horse for President Donald Trump. He has been screaming it from the rooftops. Have New Jersey Republicans had any comment on this revelation?
Oh, yeah. Republicans are enraged by these revelations, saying, in essence, we told you so. And they're not wrong. Back when New Jersey was passing laws to automatically register voters at motor vehicle offices and to provide licenses for undocumented or non-citizens, Republicans said, oh, hold on a minute here. This is obviously a risky move. They were dismissed and ridiculed at the time. And several top New Jersey Republicans now want a full investigation at both the state and federal levels. And it looks like they're getting that at least on the federal level. And they want for charges to be filed against those who knew but didn't do or say anything about it for years. In the meantime, Republicans are saying automatic voter registration should be stopped immediately. And so, Matt, this story, it looks far from over.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. That's KYW South Jersey reporter Mike Daugherty. We need to take a break. We will continue on this edition of The Week in Philly right after this. It's The Week in Philly, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
They came for soccer, but they stayed for Philadelphia. They experienced the warmth of our neighborhoods, the pride of our people, and the unmistakable spirit of our city.
This is the Week in Philly, and well, the World Cup is in the books, and things really seem to go well here in Philadelphia. And now city officials want to use that success as leverage in the future. And for more on this, let's bring in KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb. And Pat, of course, the city has been very busy the last several months, semi-quincentennial, baseball all-star game. So how are officials looking to use this experience going forward?
Well, Mayor Parker's trying to build on the momentum to keep that coordination going between all the agencies that were involved, you know, SEPTA, the tourism agencies, even the Market East team to pitch the city as a world-class destination. Congressman Brendan Boyle is already talking about 2038, the next World Cup without a location yet, saying, yo, bring the championship game here.
Frankly, I think Philadelphia did a better job than any other city in hosting the World Cup, and that has been the feedback that I have heard from people I know throughout the world.
Now, another story you did this week, Mayor Parker is looking to revitalize East Market Street, and she's using a storefront to solicit ideas. What's going on here?
The city wants resident input on how Market East should be developed. In some ways, to keep the process honest, she says lots of people have studied what needs to happen there, and then their reports go on a shelf and collect dust. She wants to execute a plan, and public engagement can only help that. So anyone passing by the 900 block of Market Street on the south side of the street can see this storefront, My Market East. Go in, fill out a questionnaire, or you can go to the city website, philly.gov/marketeast.
And how long will this storefront looking for ideas, how long will this be open? How long will this be going on?
Just till the end of the month. But the overall process, I would think, will continue at least through the end of the year. But they didn't actually give themselves a deadline for coming up with a new plan.
Also this week, you filed a story about Governor Josh Shapiro. He was in town announcing a new fund. What's it for?
Life science startups. Not an area where Pennsylvania has performed at the level of other cities and states, despite its wealth of research universities and also a lot of local pharmaceutical companies. So the governor is going after that industry with a $125 million startup fund that will also create a clinical trial network to get products to market faster.
We now have more dollars available than ever before for startups who are going to do the next life-saving treatment that's going to help propel Pennsylvania forward and help do great things for people all across this great nation.
What's the timeline for people to be able to apply to get some of this funding? Is this an open-ended thing or is there going to be a deadline?
Well, the Department of Community and Economic Development says that it will have an application online in the next few months. But the money won't be available until the end of the fiscal year. So that's next June.
Pat, on Thursday, we had a development in that standoff between the University of Pennsylvania and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Quickly remind us what this was about and then what happened this week.
Well, the EEOC on its own, not acting on a complaint, but on its own sense of things, started an investigation of anti-Semitism at Penn, which didn't go anywhere for a while. Then last November, it issued a subpoena for lists of Jewish studies faculty and members of Jewish campus organizations, including their personal information. It said it was looking for potential victims, but those very potential victims, the faculty itself, did not want the information released, nor did Penn want to release it. So Penn just ignored the subpoena. It was an administrative subpoena, so it had that leeway. But the commission sued to get it enforced in court, and a federal judge complied and said Penn would have to turn it over. Penn appealed. And then on Thursday, the two sides filed an agreement that Penn would drop its appeal and the EEOC would drop its subpoena.
Do we know at this point why they decided to drop this, why they stopped pursuing it?
No, there's no indication in the agreement, and they declined to comment further.
So is this the end of the investigation or just this part of it?
Yeah, the investigation is apparently continuing, but the commission will be doing it without these lists that it had requested.
All right. Thank you very much, Pat. KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb joining us. Time for a break. Coming up on the week in Philly, a focus on SEPTA's upcoming changes to bus routes. Don't go anywhere. The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers, proud sponsor of the KYW News Radio studios. Bring on the fun and bring home a new Honda with a great deal on your favorite Honda vehicles and finally take that road trip you've been dreaming of. Now's the time to check out the Honda Civic at HRV from Honda, the 2025 Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com best value brand.
47M, I do catch it.
Have you been aware of the changes?
No, I wasn't. Now I'm going to have to look into it because that's going to see what affects my routes that I go back and forth to work.
We continue on this edition of The Week in Philly, and SEPTA is getting ready for the first phase of route changes, which are coming next month. For more on this, let's bring in KYW's Mike DiNardo. And Mike, we have talked about this, we have referenced it, talking about other SEPTA stories, but for those unaware, give us a quick overview of these changes.
Sure. Big picture, SEPTA has been working for years to realign its bus routes. They're keeping the fleet size the same, using the same number of buses, but reducing the number of routes overall from 124 to 106. What's happening is the first phase of changes affecting roughly 20 routes. Seven of those routes will disappear starting August 23rd. SEPTA says those low ridership routes being eliminated are the 35, 47M, 62, 78, 80, 89, and 106. But other routes will be adjusted to eliminate duplication, and six others are being extended, including the Route 45 being extended down into the Navy Yard and the Route 79 to University City. Plus, there will be two entirely new routes, the Route 72 on Cheltenham Avenue, ultimately linking the Frankfurt Transit Center and Cedarbrook Plaza, and Route 76 between North and South Philadelphia along Delaware Avenue.
What's the why here, the big picture why they're making these changes?
They want to make bus travel more efficient and create more frequent routes, those that run at least every 15 minutes. Since SEPTA was founded in 1964, it never really did a top-to-bottom realignment of its bus routes. Residential and work and commuting patterns have changed a lot since then. And with these changes, SEPTA hopes riders will be waiting less for their bus to arrive. Ultimately, it's expected the realignment will create 29 routes that have service every 15 minutes or better. SEPTA GM Scott Sauer illustrated it for us this way. Maybe right now you have a 55-minute ride on one bus. Under these changes, you can get to your destination in 35 minutes, but you might have to take two buses. After all is said and done, SEPTA hopes that more reliable service will increase ridership.
So set off the top, this is the first phase of changes. How many phases will there be start to finish?
Three phases are planned between now and June of 2027, but there could be more after that. SEPTA is still working on those, any possible final phases.
Now, as far as getting ready for this first phase, what is SEPTA doing to prepare?
It is ramping up its messaging in many ways, low tech and high tech. There will be flyers on board buses, and they'll be taped to poles at bus stops along affected routes. SEPTA staff will be going out to answer questions in person on buses and at stops and transit centers. And in addition to listing the changes, the SEPTA website has a new bus network trip planner. It's a tool you can use to plan your trip with the new routes. You may have noticed new permanent signage at bus stops designated frequent service with a red color, and they started rolling out to 13,000 locations this week.
So once again, this is the first phase they're getting ready for. Will this routine of preparation, is it expected to be the same for every phase?
We'd expect some tweaks along the way as SEPTA learns things. But as far as we know, it'll be a similar plan for phase two, which is next February, and phase three in June of 2027.
So a lot of moving parts here. Is this a big expense, or is this all kind of moving things around that are already under the same financial tent?
Ultimately, you have the same number of buses and same number of drivers. They are just running those routes more frequently. So aside from the initial design and cost for signage, SEPTA expects this to be revenue neutral.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. That is KYW's Mike DiNardo joining us. We need to take a break. We will have more on this edition of The Week in Philly coming up right after this. Don't go anywhere.
We're very excited to have 54 high school kids and their teachers here for our Young People's Continental Congress.
To just be able to talk to other peers who are interested in early American history is a super cool thing.
Welcome back to The Week in Philly. And recently we had a couple of cool stories about young people doing important things. And we wanted to focus on these stories. So to do that, let's bring in KYW's Justin Udo. And Justin, first off, tell us about the Young People's Continental Congress, which is being held right here in Philadelphia.
That's right. Yes, this is the third year that they're bringing the kids here to Philadelphia to do this. And it's kids from all over the country and in U.S. territories. And throughout the week, they've been doing a number of really cool things. One of those things include going down to Carpenter's Hall, going to the mall, going to the Constitution Center, just all of the historic buildings, all of the historic places here in Philadelphia, and learning kind of what the founders were going through, what they were doing, and what led them to make the decisions they were making. So it's kids from all over. I was able to talk to a number of these kids. They said it's cool learning about history. And at the same time, you know, just connecting with people that are from all over the country. And whenever they come together and they put together their own kind of Declaration of Independence, you kind of see, just like the forefathers, these men that were coming from different colonies and different places coming together and kind of, you know, seeing what fits best for everyone, just not their area.
Yeah, and that was kind of my next question. Like, they literally are kind of doing their own Declaration of Independence. And what other kind of activities? You talked about all the great places they're going. What have they actually been doing?
They're putting together their Declaration of Aspirations of American Democracy. It's what they want to see, the future of the country they want to see together, and kind of putting those ideals down and voting on that and putting together a document.
All right, very cool. Switching gears now, Justin, you also did a story this week on an Upper Darby High School grad who created a really incredible AI program. Tell me more.
Yes, that's Kenda Harmahim. He's just graduated from Upper Darby High School, and he's on his way to Harvard. But over the last few months, he took his time to compete in this special presidential AI challenge. And he created a system that helps detect and break down human trafficking networks.
Why he decide to focus on this?
He did an internship at Princeton where he got to kind of explore AI in different ways and see how it could be used to help people.
Ever since then, my interest in public policy as well as the tech part of AI came to fruition. Growing up, I wanted to make an impact on the world. And I thought, you know, using AI would be a great start and a great opportunity to do that.
And so what this project allowed him to do is use AI to make sure that any hotel room in the country can be identified when they use pictures on the dark web of people they're trying to traffic.
It identifies the exact location of a hotel. My tool basically helps law enforcement investigators identify crime scenes from these hotel room images.
What did he get for winning this?
He got a few things. He got a trip to the White House to shake hands with the First Lady. He got more than $20,000 in scholarships. And he also got to pitch his idea and run his idea past professionals, some of the best in the country that work in AI and work in cyber. So he really kind of, you know, meeting people that he's going to be working with in his future once he finishes up at Harvard. He says while in college and university, he wants to major in AI ethics, and he wants to, you know, further the work that he's already doing, as well as be innovative in other ways that can benefit us as people, as humans, when it comes to using AI.
And will he be available to help us when the robots take over?
One can only hope, man. A kid like this, talking to him, he's pretty brilliant. I think he's going to be very busy with a lot of things for the upcoming future.
All right. Thank you very much, Justin. That's KYW's Justin Udo joining us. And that is going to do it for this edition of The Week in Philly, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. This week's episode was produced by Brian Seltzer and Sabrina Boyd-Circa. My name is Matt Leon. Thanks so much for listening, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.